keep updated.
All you need to know in 60 minutes.
This is the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener
on 702.
It's Thursday, and on Thursdays on the Midday Report, we always speak to the author of a local non-fiction book. And the book this week is a memoir from one of South Africa's most highly regarded and influential broadcasters. He really is an iconic face and an iconic voice in this country. The book is by Dan Moyani, and it's called I Don't Want to Die Unknown. And Dan really is an elder statesman of the media industry now. He was the Breakfast Show co-host on this radio station. He was the station manager of 702. He became the chairman of the board of Prime Media Broadcasting too. So the book has a lot of ground to cover, and it covers the trajectory of his career from White City, Jabavu in Soweto through the 1976 uprising to exile in Mozambique, his broadcasting career, his venture into the boardroom, and his time on television. So it really is a great pleasure to welcome Dan Moyani back to these airwaves. Dan, great to have you back on 702 and Cape Talk.
Thank you very much, Mandy. Thank you for the opportunity. It's good to talk to you.
And Dan, let's be clear from the outset. This is a short interview. We're not going to do justice to your stellar career. A lengthy profile interview with my colleagues is definitely in order, but this is just an appetizer, if you like.
No, thank you. I mean, it's still an opportunity that I don't take for granted and for which I am grateful. It is good to talk about the book. It's my first book, as you know, Mandy, and as you've read as well.
So why did you decide now, Dan, that you felt it was time in your career to write a memoir?
The truth of the matter is I started writing my memories or memoir in 2015. And then I stopped in 2016. It's not very easy to write about yourself. And then I got re-energized towards the end of last year. I guess amid the pandemic, we're all reflecting about our lives and what's happening around us. And it was just after I had interviewed Tebe Ikalafeng, the brand guru in Africa. And I was interviewing him for my small YouTube channel, Connect Africa Moyane. And he quoted Chinua Achebe to me, the Nigerian writer, where he said, until the lions have their own historians, the history of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. I thought, I need to tell my story. Because if you don't tell your story, somebody else will tell the story from their perspective. And I started imagining a world where I would have grandchildren. I don't have any currently. And they would be asking maybe, who was this man who was on 702 some time back and who worked for Radio Mozambique, who grew up in Soweto? And I thought, let me put it down. So it's part memoir, part legacy.
I love that. I love that you're telling your own story. Your story begins in Jabavu, White City. Your father was a miner, a laborer initially. Your mother was a domestic worker. You were an informal trader as a teenager selling golden, delicious apples. You had to hustle, but you also wanted to impress the girls, didn't you, Dan?
Yes, because with the first few cents that one made after my mother had given me a very small startup capital to buy my first box of Golden Delicious, one bought sneakers and bought some nice pants and shirts. That was a time because Mandy, you have to dress to the nines to impress, you know. And also, I was brought up by a self-made tailor. My father, having worked in the mines and then later as a laborer, he never earned enough, so he had to increase his income, make plans. And he embraced and taught himself how to be a tailor. And the man used to dress very, very well. So I had no choice.
That explains a lot about you, Dan. There is a lot in the book about your time in exile when you were a member of the ANC. You were a stranger in a strange country. You speak about the Matola raid, how it became a metaphor for your life in Mozambique. And then, of course, Samora Machel's death. And you tell this incredible story of how you were supposed to be on Samora Machel's plane.
Yeah, and it's when I think about it all the time, I get goosebumps, and it's a true story, and you wonder, you know, what happened. I had been selected by my editor at the time, Ian Christie, of the English Service of Radio Mozambique, to go and cover the frontline summit that was happening that weekend, that Sunday, in fact, in Lusaka, in Zambia, at a very, very tense time period in Southern Africa. There was a lot of tension, particularly between Mozambique and apartheid South Africa. So ordinarily, when the president used to travel, they would take, he would travel with his delegation, plus the media would be the national media. In this case, would be National Radio Mozambique, which broadcasts in Portuguese, and then we in the English service would then translate. But on this occasion, there was an opportunity that the presidency afforded our service, the English service, to go, and my editor, Ian, chose me. And then I was packing, and I was excited early that morning before we were going to go to the airport. And then he came to pick me up, and then I saw arriving, and he said to me, "I'm sorry, the president has decided to take another advisor on the plane. Therefore, they only go with one journalist from Radio Mozambique." And the slot for the external service, which we used to broadcast in English, was no longer available. I had to unpack. I mean, I was so upset because I was looking for it. It was going to be a big meeting. It was going to be, it was a very difficult moment in the history of the region. And also, I was going to be in the same room with some of the great leaders at the time, you know, the likes of KK himself. And I was looking forward to being at press conference and interviewing. You know, when you're a young journalist, you know how it goes, man. Mm. And that was really my focus. But then waking up on Monday morning and getting the news that the president's plane had not returned to Maputo was one of the biggest shocks of my life. And I mean, Southern Africa was shook. Mozambique was also shaken up quite a bit, and the rest of the continent. And as I say, the rest is history. I lost a couple of good friends on that plane, you know, journalists who were known, and people we used to know in the presidency. People were dealing with us in the media at the time. We had built quite good relations with some of them. Yeah.
Dan, you also speak about your time on 702. You had a choice to either go into politics or to join 702. You became a reporter during such an exciting time in this country's transition, covering the violence in Tokoza, the Shell House massacre. Our colleague Mike Wills describes you in the book as the pathmaker for transformation at 702, in the newsroom, on air, and in management too.
Yes, if you recall, Mandy, 702 was born in 1980, and I was no longer in the country, so I did not know 702. And it used to be a music radio station, and over the years, I understand, as you know, it transformed itself to be a talk radio. And when I come back to the country, I had to make a choice, as you said, and I chose to work not for the public broadcaster. I'd been working for a public broadcaster for 12 years, being Radio Mozambique's English service, Serviço Externo. And I also decided, as you say, not to get into politics. I just wanted to build myself a profile in the media. So the option I had was 702, because I'd been exposed to 702 as a correspondent, and I'd filed a couple of stories in 1990 when their normal correspondent in Mozambique was not there. Karl Meyer had traveled and he recommended me. So I was aware of 702, then I contacted the 702. Then 702 was downtown Johannesburg, corner Elof Street and Albert Street in Atkinson House. And I met Mike Wills and then we spoke. At that time, 702 was 99.9% white in terms of the people who were on air. At the time, there had been a rainbow of sound before, during when it was a music station with a diversity of DJs, but as a talk station, it was predominantly white-faced. And there was only one black newsreader, the late Alice Chavunduka, who came from Zimbabwe and had been in South Africa, and she was doing sterling work. And so in that sense, when you look back, we were like pioneering a new chapter in 702, and I was the first like black South African coming from Soweto to be employed on air and read the news, so much so I suffered backlash from listeners who were criticizing my accent and some of them very nastily telling me that I should go and work for Radio Zulu. I should not work for a white radio station.
And look at you now, Dan. Dan, there is so much more ground to cover. I wish I had more time with you, but unfortunately we have to leave it there. As I said, we haven't even got to you singing Sho Shaloza in front of the 1995 World Cup crowd, your career on television. And, you know, there is a thread throughout the book of you wanting to succeed, wanting to raise your profile, not wanting to die unknown. And it's certainly fair, Dan, to say that you've achieved that.